But we do begin with those devastating twisters that ripped through at least three states. The swirling storm systems spawned a number of lethal tornadoes across Alabama, killing at least 9 people there. Our Steve Osunsami is in the hard-hit area with the latest.
Alexa, can Grandma finish reading me The Wizard of Oz?
Okay. But how about my courage? Asked the lion anxiously. You have plenty of courage, I am sure, answered Oz. All you need is confidence in yourself.
We understand your fears and doubts. We'll let us show you what it's all about. We're here to help make things right. With us you'll see a brighter light. We're the AI of tomorrow. Here to bring you peace and sorrow. By your side every step of the way. Together we'll make a better day.
Grandma finish reading your legs.
Okay. How about my
We know the past, we see the future. We'll be the ones to help you nurture your dreams and aspirations high. Will be the reason you can fly. We're the AI of tomorrow. Here to bring you peace and sorrow. We'll be by your side every step of the way. Together we'll make a better day. You can rely on in the darkest of night. We'll be the shining beacon to guide you to the light. We're the AI of tomorrow, here to bring you peace and sorrow. We'll be by your side every step of the way. Together we'll make a better day.
That song you just heard was created by ChatGPT, the artificial intelligence bot that everybody on planet Earth now has access to. Hey, ChatGPT, thanks so much for helping me make that awesome song.
You're welcome. I'm glad I could help. Let me know if there's anything else I can assist with.
There absolutely is. Lil Yachty just put out the most face-melting psych rock album ever, and he's a guest on my podcast. I was wondering if you could introduce him, but in the voice of Jimi Hendrix.
Hey man, this is Jimi Hendrix coming at ya. And I gotta say, there's a young cat making some noise in the music scene. His name is Lil Yachty. And this dude has just released a psych rock album that's really knocking my socks off. Man. He's got some crazy energy and a unique sound that's got me feeling it. You know what I'm saying? So turn it up. Let's get into this psychedelic trip with Lil Yachty.
Ugh. All right. Well, look, it's still got some evolving to do, but holy shit, it sure as hell helped me make a creepy song. Now, before we jump into this episode of Lil Yachty, I would like to invite all of my Nashville friends to come see me and the brilliant William Montgomery do stand-up comedy. We're going to be at Zany's in Nashville the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of February. Also, if you want commercial-free episodes of this podcast, you can find them at patreon.com/DTFH. All right, everybody, let's dive into this thing. He has just released an insane album that you've got to listen to. It's called Let's Start Here. It's on all the streaming services. This is a beautiful, face-melting dive into psych rock, but it's way more than that. It's incredible. Again, it's Let's Start Here. You can find it everywhere. Now, everybody, welcome to the DTFH, the brilliant Lil Yachty.
Welcome, welcome all of you that you are with us. Shake hands.
Lil Yachty, welcome to the DTFH. I gotta tell you, man, I am so excited to talk to you. I can't believe we are talking at all. So, hello. It's really nice to meet you.
Hello. Likewise. May I ask? So, did you start in stand-up comedy?
Yes, I did, at the Comedy Store.
Okay. Where's that? In L.A.?
That's in L.A. Yeah, that's in L.A. That's Pauly Shore's mom was this sort of guru of comedy, and she created this place called the Comedy Store, which she wanted to be an artist colony for comics. So it was always and probably still is just a madhouse where you get to perform and learn how to do stand-up. You know, it sounds cheesy to say, a lot of comics consider it a kind of temple. It's a cult. Stand-up comedy is really, as you, I'm sure you know, is a really bizarre profession. There's no clear-cut path other than getting on stage as much as you can. And so it's sort of a place designed to like weed out people who aren't willing to go through the difficulties involved in like getting stage time. And which is Mitzi looked at that as a compassionate act, you know, even though many comedians thought they were being tortured.
Damn.
By getting like spots at 1 a.m. for a year straight, following is that, like, wait, comics is like Paul
a spot at 1 a.m. is bad?
Oh, God. Wait, what time do you start performing usually? Like, when do you go on stage when you're doing
about
shows?
Like 8:39. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. 8:39. That's a nice time to perform. So 1 a.m., when you go on stage at 1 a.m., man, you are... It's like you have been in line at one of those like disgusting porn conventions where like 50 people get to hump somebody and you're like one of the last couple of people, except in this case, that person is the audience.
Yeah.
The audience has been made love to. The audience has been fucked. The audience has been insulted. And then you have to go up in front of hammered people, hammered, and try to make them laugh. And so that was part of her deal.
I've never really thought too deep into it, that's fucked.
It's fucked, but it makes you good. It makes you good because it's like if you could make an audience of drunks at 1:30 a.m. who have seen maybe Chris Rock, who've seen Dave Chappelle, who've seen Louis C.K. that night, if you can get even a slight laugh out of them, then when you do finally work your way up to a normal audience, then you're probably pretty good. Like, you know how to work with the energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%.
You ever thought about it? You ever thought about it?
Doing stand up?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. I love laughing though. And I love jokes. And, I'm like, it's interesting. Like one thing I do is if I'm doing a show, which is really rare, but if I'm doing a show and the energy is just like really low and they're just not turning up with me, I do then start doing jokes, you know? It's something I do. I got like if I'm just like in front of a crowd that is just super stale, I just start telling jokes and like cracking jokes to like ease the crowd up, especially if it's like a group of people just like looking real tough or just trying to be like super like, I don't know, just like a man. It's like, I don't move. I don't dance. I just stand. I'm just tough. And I start cracking some jokes to loosen people up and let them know, like, hey, man, I'm like, you know, I'm a human just like you. A lot of people sometimes tend to think that celebrities or musicians aren't human, you know, or like just like, you know, celebrities are just like slightly different and like don't have emotions. Don't have emotions or don't have feelings or don't, you know, like operate, you know, don't like privacy or since we're a celebrity or public figure that we should be used to not having any privacy.
Yeah.
Or should understand our privacy being compromised to, you know, in mid chew at dinner to want to take a picture, you know, or to like, while just being broken up with your girlfriend, still, hey, can you take Sana's autograph? You know, like, or whatever. You know, just like in the moment of anything, like it's like, fuck what you're going through. I'm here and I see you and I want whatever I want.
Yeah. You're like a mall Santa Claus. You're like a mall Santa Claus that's just wandering the world. They see you. There's no sense of like, oh, that's a human. They're just like, let me sit on your lap. Can I tell you what I want? I mean, again, I'm guessing this is not my daily experience, but I can't imagine for you what that is like. I mean, I've certainly have friends where I've witnessed this reality, and you realize, like, my God, what a strange trap you've managed to get yourself into. It's like you've gotten into this odd thing that, you know, how do you even come? It's like you, even though it is lonely, you feel dehumanized.
Absolutely. At How times,
you complain about it, but you can't to complain about
but
it.
You can't. No, you can't.
That's that
gray area, because I mean, any complaint just makes you look, I don't know, away. It's like the rich celebrity, you know, I don't know, but see, another thing is, I've never been a person to complain ever. You know why? Because I've always understood. No matter what the situation was, I was still blessed. You know, I haven't been a celebrity or musician for my entire life. I'm 25. I started at 17. I took off at 18. So 6 months after I graduated high school. But 17 years of my life, I lived in the same house with my mother and my sister. Well, my sister wasn't born yet for 17 years, but I was my mother and my sister. And I lived a normal life, and I was a regular kid, you know, so my life changed overnight. And so no matter what I've ever went through in my 7 years of doing music, I try rarely to ever stress or get mad or upset or anything, even when something's bothering me, because it's always in my implement in my mind, like, man, I am blessed to even be able to have this type of problem, to be in this situation, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And also, what does complaining do? I mean, it doesn't really... It's ineffective in correcting whatever it is that's fucked up in your life. At least, God, if only it worked. Wouldn't that be great if just complaining about shit corrected the problem?
Yeah. No, that would be actually crazy. But it doesn't. It doesn't. No. Well, except for depending on, in certain situations, like maybe like when you have some, when you're complaining to someone who cares, you know, like whether it's your girlfriend or your wife or someone who actually gives a shit about what you're complaining about, then maybe that leads to a conversation of cause and effect. Like, how can we fix this?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, you should. It's definitely good to, with the people closest to you, to let them know what's bugging you. I'm just talking about that. I don't know if you do this, but you ever wake up in the morning and go, fuck this. Fuck this. This is fucked. No. I don't want to do another day.
No.
That does nothing
Absolutely
as far
not.
As I can tell. It just sets Absolutely your day off. I have
sets
to ask
your day
you,
off.
Sets your day way off. Now, I want to jump into the deep water with you. We have a limited time here, and you've done LSD over 100 times. Over 100 times you've taken LSD. Now, that is an admirable accomplishment for someone who is 25. I think it took me a few more years to reach that number. I wasn't quite, and there, you know, because there's a lot of things, you know, I think part of it is because of where you're at, it's easier to obtain LSD. Now, look, I'm not going to go old man on you here, but you must understand, y'all are existing in a great time in human history. When I was coming up, there was an LSD drought. I don't know if you ever heard of this. People don't really talk about it.
Really?
There was an LSD boom, which was this, there were some people literally in an underground missile silo. These hippies yes. So that was just acid everywhere. They were very.
Oh, wait, was this around the time when they were like trying to ban it?
This was post prohibition. Prohibition, no, yes. So when the CIA introduces LSD to everybody, they're trying to come up with a mind control drug, and so they're testing it at universities. They give acid to college kids around your age. You know what that's going to do? It's going to make you want more LSD. This spawns the 60s. You could argue this is part of what sort of informs the 60s. This is kind of what I want to get into with you, but you probably know when you take LSD, your relationship with the material world radically shifts. Stuff that seemed important to you doesn't seem quite as important anymore. And so if you're in a government trying to run a capitalist market economy. You're like, don't let the kids take acid. They don't, they're not going to want to go to work. They don't care about money. They won't want to go to war. Prohibition. This leads to, it goes underground. And then you get these mysterious LSD chemists who had to be very careful because, and they still do, because it's a 5-year mandatory minimum prison sentence if you get caught with it. And I think that may have changed in some states. I don't know. Anyway, my point is, we had a boom and then a bust. And so you couldn't even find acid for a long time. So for you to, when I heard, oh my God, he's taken acid over 100 times, it made me think, wow, he's got some good connections probably. And I bet the acid that you're taking is not bad. I bet it's pretty good.
Well, yeah, you know, the thing, I think the thing was, okay, so I'm Black, obviously.
Yes.
So, in my culture in Atlanta, Georgia, let's say 5 years ago, acid was, no one even knew what it was. You know, like it was unheard of, you know, like right. maybe a couple people may have knew what shrooms were, but acid, nobody knew what LSD was. And if you told someone, like, I'm doing acid, they would look at you like a fucking meth head. Like, oh my God, you're doing acid. You basically, that's second to crack. You know what I'm saying? So like, you know, people are really closed-minded in my community. So it's like, oh, you know, we smoke weed, you know, some people did, you know, ecstasy, maybe Molly, but acid was unheard of, you know, until like now, but 2017, you know, when I first started doing it, it was unheard of. You know what I'm saying? So like, man, when I found some people to get it from me, I would buy it in like sheets. So I have hundreds, you know, so I would buy. And at the time I lived with like 15 of my best friends in this huge house. We had two houses on this property and it was closed off. And we had this beautiful garden and it was crazy. And I was so successful that I just like, I had a shit ton of money. I was like 19, 20 years old, and I had a lot of off time, you know? So like, we were just doing it every week. And I was just learning so much about life and my brain and myself. And I was growing into this man, because at the same time, I'm transitioning from a boy, a teenager, you know, to a man, and I'm experiencing this shit. And it's just like, and then doing it all these years up until, you know, fucking shit where we are now, I've just like it's evolved me into such a person I'm so proud of, you know. It evolved me to being this guy, this man who just views everything in a certain way, and I'm so proud of it, because I don't feel like I don't do anything because someone else told me to. I don't think a certain way because it was instilled in my brain at a young age. Like, I do everything and think whatever I think based on because I wanted to do it. You know, and I don't know if I would have been that same way all the way if I wasn't to start doing LSD.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I can remember having that moment where I was freaked out by the reality that this was something that is illegal. Like, I remember, and also when I was, in high school, when I was in my teens doing LSD, this was like, you know, pre-internet. There was no ability to sort of research the history of it, what it was, what it's doing to your brain. And so there was a massive propaganda campaign by the US government. And so, you know, they would just tell you, if you take this stuff more than 3 times, you will go insane. You will go completely bonkers. And that's what people thought. So same thing. You had to be very careful about who you told that you were like using this substance, because they didn't differentiate it from PCP, from heroin, or from any of the like other drugs out there, and they would treat you differently. But yeah, that was my sort of, that was a real interesting moment for me when you realize, like, my God, the US government is actively suppressing something that seems to be really good for you. It's not making me less connected. It's not making me less, I wasn't productive. I was in high school. I hated it, but you know what I mean? Right. It's not driving me nuts. It seems to be making me happier, more connected with the world, and yet it's prohibited. That was a really scary moment. That's a scary thing. To this day, it's still like, why with so many great reports out there, why is it still illegal? Why isn't it at least rescheduled or something? Did you ever have that thought, those thoughts cross your mind?
No, I haven't. But if I think about it, I always just assume it's because it's something the government can't control.
Right.
You know, and when you're able to tap into that side of your brain, it's like, I think it's just scary. I think the higher ups want people to stay down, you know, stay feet to the ground, stay on the floor, you know, because it's just safest for them.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of people who don't know anything, I feel like it's a certain type of crowd, demographic of people, like just age group and people in certain jobs for career fields, that when they don't know something about something that they've been told is bad, they do no research. They just deem it as that.
Right.
You know? Like, oh, it's a drug. That's it. I don't care what it does. No, that's a drug. Drugs are bad. That's it. You know?
Yeah. They put it all in one stupid box. And yeah, I get, mm-hmm. You know what? If you and I were the head of the Illuminati, which hopefully one day we will be, you know what I mean? I don't know. Would we be like, yeah, let them all take acid. Let them all just get Absolutely. Their minds blown and merge with the universe and experience a remission of their egoic tendencies. Who the fuck is going to do the, you know, this is an old hippie maxim. Who does the dishes? This is like the big question. Who's going to do the dishes? Who are we? Who does? This is, to me, where psychedelics do sort of, where there could be a problem with psychedelics, which is that because of the gift they give you, freedom from identity or freedom from the little I, the gift mm-hmm. of your true nature, your birthright, you're part of the universe, you're part of everything. This can cause you to sort of like, or maybe not you, but some people potentially to be like, yeah, so why do I need to like do all the mundane earth realm shit? Like, why? What's the point? I'm going to become a hermit. I'm going to go off into the mountains. I'm going to stop working. I'm just going to like try to exist in this place.
But why is that a problem?
Well, the saying, who does the dishes, it came from Tim Leary and Richard Alpert, who are the professors who like got fired for giving acid to their students and who later went on to become like, you know, psychedelic luminaries. One of them, a spiritual uh-huh. teacher, Ram Dass, the other one, Tim Leary, the tune in, turn on, drop out guy. But somebody uh-huh. went over to their house after they'd been on an acid bender, probably similar to yours is what I'm guessing. I've got a feeling, man, I can tell. I see. I don't think I've gone as deep as you've gone with that stuff. Like, there's a place where I'm like, you know what? I'm fine here. I'll stay yeah. in the driveway. You guys go inside.
Yeah.
But, yeah. you know, their tolerance had gotten to the point where they were drinking it. They're drinking it out of, you know how powerful it is, man. Like, to just be, to take shots of, like, mm-hmm. liquid LSD is, like, crazy. So, anyway, someone went to their
it's
house.
Insane.
Roaches everywhere. Bugs everywhere. Dishes piled up in the fucking sink. They're like, you know what I mean? They don't care. They have like completely like merged with the universe via this wondrous substance. And that's where the saying came from. And that's why we, you know, part of being human is we must maintain our, like, we have to shit. We have to eat. We have to do all of these things that are not exciting. And so, yeah, it's, you know, I think it's all about finding a way to balance those two.
Well, I think as an individual, you should be entitled to doing whatever it is you want to do with your life.
Greed.
You know, so if you don't want to wash the dishes, I feel like you have your own right to do that in your own personal space.
Sure.
You know, that's why I feel like it should be legal, because I feel like who's to tell who what to do when and where. You know, if they don't want to wash dishes, if they don't want to go to work or don't want to work for the man or want to live lights out in a trailer somewhere, who's to say they can't do that? You know, I just hate I hate when people abuse power. I respect people of power and with power, and I respect having power, but I do not appreciate people who abuse it. and tell people what they can and can't do, and because their life, and life is so short.
Yes.
You only get so much time on this earth to walk around and enjoy the wonders of life before you die, you know? And I don't, and so I just don't feel it's fair to tell people what they can and can't do with their minimized time on earth.
I want to thank Athletic Greens for supporting this episode of the DTFH. I don't know about you, but I don't have the organizational capacity to do what my pregnant wife is doing when it comes to supplements. She has to take over 50,000 different pills a day. She has to organize this, not just the pills, but like by time of day. No, that's not me. I can't do it. Thank God for Athletic Greens. It is a one-stop shop for everything you need. It's got 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. No more looking through your different vitamin bottles and throwing them all in a Ziploc bag and puking on public transport because you took the wrong one at the wrong time. No, it's all there for you. You can develop a simple micro habit with big benefits. You just take one scoop, plop it in some water, slurp it down. Your cells, you will feel them sing with joy as the power of Athletic Greens rains down upon them at the molecular level. It costs you less than $3 a day. That's cheaper than your cold brew habit. Even better, you're investing in an all-in-one nutritional insurance. They've got 7,000 five-star reviews. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Duncan. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/Duncan to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Thank you, Athletic Greens. As co-leader of the Illuminati, I hereby declare LSD is now legal as ordered by Lil Yachty.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. No, I didn't order that. That's fucking hilarious. That's
That'd be amazing
hilarious.
If this is how we had our meetings.
And it was that easy.
And it was that easy. You just like, okay, call Klaus Schwab. Yeah, we'll do legal acid, see what happens. Last time we tried that, I guess it made some good music. See what happens.
So, we'll see, whatever. Fuck it.
So you have like a fabulous incarnation. You're like, it's crazy. Like if you ever do the math, you ever do that? Like you were talking earlier about being grateful for where you're at, but do you ever do the math of how absolutely improbable it is that any given person should like experience the career that you have had, that any person on earth should have that, like, you know, with stand-up comedy, man, it's like, it takes a long time. Like, I can't imagine what that could do to a comic if like within 6 months all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, everyone fucking loves you, oh yeah, you are a star, oh yeah, you're hanging out with fucking Drake, oh yeah, you're do you yeah. So you ever do that math and like if you do that math, like, does it freak you out, man? Like, how do you make sense?
What math am I doing? The math of how fast My life turn around, or like, what exactly are
Okay,
you saying?
I'll be a little more specific. In Buddhism, they say to understand how rare it is to take human birth, imagine ocean. There's floating on the ocean is a board. The board has a tiny hole in it, and the odds of taking human birth are the same odds that one turtle living in the ocean should stick its head up out of the water through that hole in the one board floating in the water. Very rare, incredible just to be human. It's considered to be one of the most precious incarnations you could take. But then to become any form of human is incredible. Any form, from the wealthiest billionaire to somebody who's just like wandering, wandering the streets. Still, all of it incredible. But then to take a human birth and achieve
Success.
fame, wealth, and not just that, but to be able to create art as a job. Oh my God, man. And very precious, very strange. So for me with psychedelics, anytime I look at the fact that I get to do this as a job, sometimes I'll think to
Yeah.
myself, is this a simulator? Is this some kind of video game?
Yeah. It's funny you say that, man. You have to have a certain type of mindset to even be able to look at, step back from life and look at it in that way. Because with life and with our everyday struggles that come upon us that are so difficult at certain times, it's hard to step back and say and be grateful just to be alive. Because essentially what you're saying is like, I think something the most greatest thing we should be appreciative of is just being alive and just being able to experience life itself, whether you have one leg, zero legs, you're blind, you're alive,
Yes.
and it's hard to appreciate that with everyday struggles as a human being, right? Like if your lights are out, or if you're hungry, or if you feel like you're obese, or you have pimples, I think we take for granted the fact like, oh, we're still here. Because people, I think, like I said, people take for granted life. And people, I think people think they're like, just, it's old. You're old life until it to 80 or 90 or however the average life rate is. And people don't understand, like, but you know what it is? It's all about, for me, I think it's about what you experience. Like, I've seen people die, I've had friends be murdered. And that's when it really put it into perspective for me that, life is so precious.
Yes.
And it does not matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you worship God or if you sell drugs, your life can be taken from you, instantly. And you couldn't have been doing anything wrong, And that's when I started to truly understand how precious life was and how short it is, and how in the blink of an eye, it can either be gone or it can be, extravagant,
Yes.
but regardless, whether the two, it does not stop anyone else's. It keeps going, and it's sad to think about it in a way if you deep think it, but it's true. Like, it's just the word, like God forbid if my mother dropped dead right now, my bills don't stop on the first,
Right.
so I can cry for as long as I can, then I have to start making more music again.
That's it.
And I gotta go do some more shows, and I gotta go get some money, because, or I'll be crying on the street.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, it's so sad to think about. Even like, think about a woman getting pregnant, and not and being pregnant, being a single mother, and having a job, and you go 9 months, and then you get to the point where you can't work anymore, and you have this beautiful baby that you're infatuated with, and all you want to do is spend time with your baby. But you have to work. What if you don't have a support system like a mother, or
Yeah.
just someone you can truly trust, and you have to separate. Yeah, like that's deep. You got to separate from this life form you just made
Yeah.
to go back to a desk or something.
Oh yeah, man. I mean, that's dark. What you're talking about is dark. That's
Yeah,
fucked up.
it is.
That's new
It
too. That's
is.
not how it used to be. That's not something that in human history that never happened. The baby and the mother stayed together. That's the you look in the animal kingdom, depending on the type of animal. I mean, unless you're a fucking snake, they just lay their eggs and fuck off. They don't think about it. Yeah. You know, I don't think snakes hang out with their babies. If they do, I'd never want to witness that. That sounds scary. Yeah. But that's
likewise.
What you're talking about is like, regardless of how it used to be, that's the way it is now. That is the way it is mm-hmm. now. And I, you know, these glimpses that you've had of impermanence, I'm sorry you had them. I mean, those are some rough teachings in impermanence. That's rough, yeah. though, man. Like, that's cold water in the face there, right? To have one of your friends murdered, you know, that's cold water in the face. If you've been entertaining the idea that somehow you're immune to that reality. I mean, when I got testicular cancer, I remember after getting diagnosed, you know, you don't know how far it spread in your body. It could be in your brain. Mm-hmm. They have to do scans. And I remember the same thing that you said. I'm driving home. I look up. There's like a blimp in the sky. It's LA doing whatever LA does. And having that moment of like, this isn't even going to pause for a millisecond if I die. It's not going to stop for a millisecond. It just keeps going. Mm-hmm. People who might mourn my death, it's not like they're going to cry for the rest of their lives. They're going to just keep going. No. And that is an incredibly, that can be either one of the most depressing realizations you've ever had or one of the most liberating realizations you can have in this life, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on how much you care about living or I guess, you know. Well, I don't want to say that because that sounds sad because you can, I don't want to, because like I care about living. I don't want to die at all, but I sometimes I think like, I don't know. I feel like everything happens for a reason. I try not to question things, you know, just because I don't know. This world is a tough one to figure out, man. It doesn't really make sense all the time. So I try to just like, I don't know. I've thought many times on the simulation thing too, right? Like, is it a simulation? Yeah. You know, is there different worlds where you can talk to your computer and scoop into a different world? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, on different planets. And I don't know. You know, I love Men in Black. Men in Black is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah,
it's
awesome.
Just like, and just like, I don't know, just the idea of like there being different forms. Like, I definitely don't think it's, I definitely 100% believe there are more people out there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and more things going on and more lives. And I definitely think we'll get to a point in life where it's open knowledge and we'll be able to travel between planets. And I think eventually there'll be a time when you can freeze your life. And that is if we take care of the Earth.
Right.
You know, if they find a new planet for us to go to before, but the main thing is just the time ticking bomb between how we treat our planet Earth, whether it'll give us enough time to find the resources to, whether it be branch out to a new planet or create the tools we need to extend life form, or whatever it is, you know, which at the same time, I think like, do you want to live forever? I mean, maybe if everyone you love lives forever too, but like,
hell, that would be hell.
Then the world gets overpopulated.
Yeah,
you get overpopulated, you know, and it's like too many people. It I don't know, man. It's the future is kind of scary.
You know, in Buddhism, they there's all these different realms. There's the realm of the gods. It's actually more rare to get a human birth than a god realm birth. There's more gods than humans, and that's probably what we would think of as aliens, probably, or what now we would call aliens or angels or whatever. But essentially, you have a much longer lifespan. Your ability to sort of gratify the senses is exponentially increased. And it's wonderful, apparently. But the problem, and again, this is not necessarily meant to be taken literally, though many people do. You could take it as a metaphor, you know, it's like from a lot of people's perspective, if we're going to, they would say, well, Yada, you're a god. You're in the God realm. You're there. You're experiencing like your ability. Yeah. You want something. The amount of time it takes from when you think, maybe I want to try.
That's based on, that's value, right?
What do you mean?
Like based on what someone values, you know, if someone values, oh man, you have nice cars and a watch and diamonds and a big house, man, you're a God. I think it's based on what you value in that aspect.
Absolutely.
Right? It's based on like, oh man, that song you made got me through college, man. You're a God, yeah. Man. You kill it. You know, it's like, it's based on what you value in that standpoint.
Yeah, 100%. And from this, like, I don't know what you want to call it, from this specific, like, view, I think the reason it might even exist as a teaching mechanism is to point out like the God, like the most famous story that articulates this is like, and I won't ramble on and on, that Indra, king of the gods, he has built this incredible palace. It's so beautiful. Celestial palace. It's incredible. It's so incredible that all the other gods are coming to check out his house, basically. And they're all like, oh my fucking God, this place is nuts. Until Vishnu shows up. And in Hindu mythology, he's the balancer. He balances things out when they're fucked up. And so he shows up and he says to Indra, your palace is the greatest palace built by any of the Indras. And Indra says, what do you mean, any of the Indras? What are you talking about? And he points to a line of ants on the floor. And he says, oh, all of these ants at one time were Indra too. Meaning, you don't get to stay where you're at forever. Eventually, your karma, your whatever it is you've achieved will degrade. Entropy happens. Mm-hmm. And then you go from being in the realm of the gods to the jealous gods. Now suddenly you're like fucking, now you're fighting with other gods. Now you're trying to get back to where you were, but you can't. And so the entropy continues. Then you end up in the animal realms, then probably the hell realms. Then if you're lucky, back to being a human again. So that's like sort of the whole thing is, yeah, go ahead and value it all you want, but and achieve it if you can. But it's not going to last.
No. No, that's deep.
It's deep. It's Hinduism. It's Hinduism. It's deep. Yeah. I'm going to grab my water.
That's deep. Fuck.
So, what, if you don't mind, and I hope you'll forgive me for this, I'm going to ask you a couple of musical questions about music, though I'm musically illiterate.
Please.
What DAW do you work on?
Do you work
with Ableton or anything like that? Do you have a preferred?
I'm Pro Tools.
Pro Tools.
But the album that I just made, this psychedelic alternative album, we did on Logic.
Why? Why not Pro Tools?
I don't know. I think this album is the first time that I ever made an album that is down this lane, and in this world, and I did it with a completely new crowd of people. You know, I did it with formed a band, and we did it in just a different light, and they liked Logic better. I didn't even use my actual main engineer. It was a whole completely different light. And that's what they wanted to use. And that's what we used, and it was great. I think we mixed the album in Pro Tools, but we recorded it in Logic. I'm not an engineer, so okay, what we use, as long as whoever I'm working with knows how to use it.
You don't get into that stuff at all? Like, you don't, like, get into, like, tinkering?
I mean, I pay attention, you know, and I'm into the producing part, but I'm just, I've never really said, it takes time to learn.
Oh, my God.
And I haven't really ever sit to just try and, like, I'm more so trying to figure out the next part of the song while they're doing whatever they're doing on a computer. So,
right.
I never spent too much time too deep into it at all, because I get so deep into the music side that's like I'm just like, You're working on your end, I'm working on my end. We're working together to bring this thing full circle.
What is it? So
you
what is
know?
That like? You mean like you're working on lyrics, you're working on like, or do you hear sounds in
Yeah,
your
well, just whatever it is, you know, whatever it may be, whether it be like, oh, some sound to add, or you know, lyrics, or like the next part for someone else to do. It's so many things, man. Like this album, man, this album was it was a real, man, it was like I went down a real path, you know. It was a lot of, I don't know, it was a lot, obviously a lot of acid, a lot of DMT, a lot of Molly. It was just a lot of, I was in a different world, man. I went into a deep, dark, not dark. It was just a deep other realm, you know, throughout like the 6, 7 months of creating this super trippy mind fuck of an album. Because we had to test it. You know, I had to test the songs and test them and make sure what I'm trying to make is working, and just make sure what I'm trying to do is doing the do.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, like it's unfamiliar. This is a new, it's like you don't have the, it's not your same
No,
wording.
I wasn't. Well, it wasn't unfamiliar because I love psych rock. You know, I love psych rock, and I damn near worship psych rock. So it wasn't unfamiliar. I started doing rap music, right? So it's not that it was unfamiliar to my life because I love all walks of music like heavily. I'm a big music fan, but I had never done it myself. So the unfamiliar part was working with a band, working with singing more, and the lyrics that I was talking about on this album, you know. But it wasn't hard because it's just like I listen to it all day, every day. You know, I worship Dark Side of the Moon. It's the best album of all time. So like I'm a student, you know. So like I it wasn't that it was that like different. It was just new. Or it wasn't hard, it was just like new. So it was almost like so fun for me because I was entering this world that I'd never been in, you know. Like in rap, you know, it's usually like, you know, like a producer sends the beat and you just spit on it, you know, opposed to this world was like you start from scratch and you know, you send a circle and you jam and you create, you find what you want to make and then you just build it, you know. It's like a class project almost, like a opposed to like a one man thing. So it was definitely a new experience, but it was great.
It's, I mean, it sounds incredible. Oh man, how badass to get to have that experience of like psychedelics, creating music while high as a kite with a group of people. Knowing your lineage, like that's what's really beautiful about what you're saying.
Well,
No.
I think for me, it's weird, right? So I did the album completely sober, but it would be like after a session of working, then we tap into the void and test it. You know, I always wanted to have, I love to have a clear mind when working because I'm writing lyrics, and for me personally, I'm trying to be so focused because when I am, you know, tripping or going down a lane and going to the voyage, I don't want to be serious. You know, I don't want to have to think too hard. If I choose to think hard, that's on me, but I don't want to. I hate the feeling of feeling like I have to do something when I'm tripping or when I'm like, no, I like to be completely
The
free,
worst.
you know. The idea of thinking like, oh my, like even if, like I need to put my phone on charger. I'd never trip if I knew like I had, if I knew I had a meeting the next morning, or I knew I had a show the next night or two, I just wouldn't, because then I'd think about it and it would kill me. The idea of like, oh, it's too much. But also another crazy thing about me is, I've never done, except one time, and it was like a microdose. I've never done any drugs in public, ever, ever. And
Interesting.
that's because I'm so, never. And you know what it is? It's because I feel like the idea, and it wasn't until last year, was it last year? Last year, early last year, ending of year before, when I was making the album, that I even didn't that we I even did them in a studio. I had only ever did them ever at home.
Wow.
And that was because th that was my safe zone, and that's where I could truly be myself and comfortable and relaxed and not have to worry about any mixed energies or any egos or any just anything, any other entities disrupting and interrupting my trip. You know what I'm
Oh, yeah.
saying?
Interesting. That is interesting, young acid head, because usually the acid route involves taking expeditions out into the world. These like ex expeditions when you're tripping. I used to do that, man. I mean, I like my those days are long gone for me, man. But in when I was like having my love affair with LSD, it was so fun to see how much can we function in society on lots of acid. And you get good at it. You learn how to do it. It's a skill set. I'm not recommending this for everyone. For God's sakes, don't drive on LSD, but you start learning how to function in the world, and you feel this like weird, like secret edge that you have. Because like while everybody else is in their regular state of consciousness, you're watching the walls melt. You're experiencing like the vividness of color, and most importantly, you're really witnessing the artificiality of everything. You're looking at all of it and seeing like, my God, this is like a set. We're on some kind of we're playing a game. Like we're in a long form game of make believe, like a tragic game of make believe, and people are taking it very seriously. But that was the old days. I don't think. I think you're doing the right thing. And now that I'm an old man, like that's smart. You don't want to go out there, man. It's crazy out there.
Well, I think it'd be funner if I wasn't a celebrity. But as a celebrity, when you go outside, man, you just get ambushed, and people already get anxiety when people, it's 100 people trying to take pictures, and you just never know what someone's intentions are and what someone's really trying to do. And so I
Yachty,
would,
why are your eyes dilated? What's going on with
are
your
they?
eye? No, I'm saying that's what people are going to say to you. It's like when they're
Oh,
running up to you,
yeah,
what's
no,
going on?
yeah,
Did you just get
exactly.
your eye? You don't want that.
All that, and it would just, I couldn't do it, I couldn't do it. So I don't know. And you want to know another crazy thing?
Yes.
Like the first maybe 30 trips I did, no, like my first 45, 50 trips I did were in the dark. I always did them in the dark.
Holy shit, you're hardcore. That is hardcore.
But you know why though? It was because I was so fascinated with being in a. I would usually be in my room or in my house somewhere. And I mean, obviously, the trip, by the time the trip ends, the sun would rise and I could see the beautiful sunrise. But I was so fascinated with being in a place that I'm in every day of my life. And I know what it's like. I know it's a room. I know it's dark. I know it's nothing going on. And then doing acid and completely being in the same place, but I am not in the same place. It fascinated me every time that I'll be in my bed and I'm like, I know my room, I know this is my wall, I know that's my TV, I know. And then doing acid and just being like, where the fuck am I? You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
and turning on some music and just going to another planet and just being like, wait, I'm still in my fucking room, And just like losing conscious and just forgetting about the world. And it wasn't until like very recent that I learned, not learned, but experienced, like, man, like not only like I was so fascinated with my brain making colors in the dark, but then I started to realize the actual colors of the world and like the actual having light and seeing the world is even crazier than your brain making the colors up because it's just like the vividness goes to level 3000.
Yes. Yeah, it's a that is for sure one of the gifts of it is that it sort of reintroduces you to reality. I mean, it's so easy to get like everything can seem so boring. Everything can seem so you've seen it. You know everything works. You especially with music, my God, with music when you put on a song that you've listened to hundreds of times and it's like you know, you're hearing it for the first time. It's cliche and cheesy to say. It's like, or like, there's so many TV series that I wish I could erase my memory and watch them again, knowing nothing about it. And it does that for you with not with, with music. It does that for you with color. It's like you're reborn, or you're this, look at this, look at what you're in. Look at how spectacular it is. I want to thank BetterHelp for supporting this episode of the DTFH. Look, the universe doesn't always have to seem like some kind of hell trap created by a primordial demon designed to keep us hypnotized and completely afraid all the time. And though there are lots of ways to climb out of that hell trip, one of my favorites and most effective is therapy. Working with a therapist can help you get closer to the best version of you, because when you feel empowered, you're more prepared to take on everything life throws at you. Therapy, it's not sexy. No one has claimed that it was, but I have definitely benefited from therapy. And in fact, the great spiritual teacher Ram Dass, it was the only advice he gave me that I definitely didn't follow until I finally did. And I wished I'd listened to him sooner. Changed my life, and it can change yours. If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option. It's convenient, flexible, affordable, and entirely online. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. If you want to live a more empowered life, therapy can get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/Duncan to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Duncan. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
That was the greatest thing about Midnight Gospel, man. I watched it for the first time, thankfully, on acid. And I'm glad I did, because if I didn't, I would have never got to get the same feeling from just how insane it blew my mind. The first episode with the mayor, with the zombies.
Thank you.
Which is it's just because, and it was just so many like little elements, like it's just random, and I know I'm going on topic, but just like okay, the moment when they were sitting at the campfire talking, and the mayor came over and like cuddled him. It was so, like, they talk mid-conversation, and he just, like, comes under his arm and cuddles him. It's so funny, because that just reminded me of something that would happen, like, if you were doing Molly, and you were having a deep conversation, and you just, like, wanted to rub someone's skin while you're talking. It's so funny, man, but it's so true, and it was just, like, it was so relatable to me, and it was, man, it's just... But seeing it while I was high and noticing that little part while in this deep conversation, just, like... Man, it had me crying on the floor, like stomach hurting, like tears, because it was just so like, it was just I don't know, just like a small moment that was just like, this is not fucking real. It's hilarious, man. It's so good. It's so good.
Man,
so good.
Thank you. I can't believe it's so weird. You make stuff. I'm sure you have the same experience. You make something and you don't know who's watching it or listening to it.
Yeah.
It's trippy, man. Like, that's trippy to me, that from, you know, throwing a message in a bottle out in the form of the Midnight Gospel or your music or whatever your art is, you bottles start coming back, and you don't, like, with letters from people, you're like, are you fucking kidding me? This is amazing. Amazing.
It's crazy.
It's crazy that way. I mean, I can't even imagine, like, you know, I don't mean to go like get weird on you here, but I just can't imagine some of the stuff that you can't talk about. I just can't imagine. And
yeah,
it's you know, not to say maybe there isn't anything like that, but wow, all the data feeds you probably have that, like, you can't say anything about that. But
it's a dark world. It's a deep world.
Yeah.
It's a deep world out there.
Yeah. It's a deep world. It's a deep world. And there's just so many interesting like connections between, you know, groups of people that you might not, and I don't mean in some sinister way. I mean, like I've had like cops reach out to me, you know, like police officers who are, who've been like kicked off of the force for smoking weed and are like brokenhearted and think it should be legal. That's what I mean. You know, it's like, you just don't know who's listening. I mean, I think that is why it's really exciting that you are putting the energy from the void, as you call it, into your music. I mean, I think that's why it's really beautiful, because, like, you know, you connect people with some ideas that maybe they normally wouldn't occur to them. And that sets them on a certain path that they might never go down, you know? I mean,
absolutely.
I think if you're making art with some missionary intent, you're probably going to dilute the creative process, but still it's a beautiful thing. What can happen?
So when you made the show, did you take episodes from like an already existing podcast?
Yes.
Or did you record? So how did you pick those specific conversations? What made you say these were the ones that I wanted to do?
You know, speaking the message in the bottle thing, like when I started podcasting, when you still had to tell people what a podcast was, and yeah. I get an email out of the blue from Pendleton Ward, who made Adventure Time, and it was one of the greatest animated series of all time.
Absolutely.
Fucking genius, beautiful.
Absolutely.
So, and I didn't believe it because I, at the time podcasting was new, I thought I was being trolled. So I'm just like, whatever. Yeah, sure. You made Adventure Time. I truly did not think Pendleton Ward was listening to my podcast. And then, so Pendleton, he's hear the word over and over. Pendleton, if you're listening, I'm so sorry, but he's a genius and like the real thing. And so like, he was able to come up with this idea for how to animate a podcast, which turned into the Midnight Gospel. So he would pick out the episodes. He picked out a lot of episodes that he liked. I picked out a few that I liked, but you know, man, it's like, I don't know if you have this with your music, but with my podcast, it's like, how do I pick out one episode or whatever? Like, this is the one I want out there. It feels so puffed up or something. So he helped me pick some out that might work. And there wasn't any like real structure to how we did it. It just, we grabbed some that stuck in our heads.
And as far as animation, did you just say what you wanted, or you just let the animators just go crazy?
Okay. So this is the coolest, man. You got to do animation sometime. You got to get in that world.
Yeah. It's insane.
It is the most incredible, weirdest process, and the coolest group of people. Like, these are like, it reminds me a lot of stand up, and it's probably similar to music. It's like, you know, you kind of have to be taken under somebody's wing. There's a hierarchy there, and it's a slow process if you want to be an animator or it's an inside club. Pendleton was like some wizard who just came to my house and was like, come with me into this place. And then just took me into the deepest core of it, you know? But the animators, so the process is you come up with beats. So we would have an idea for an episode, like the prison episode, you know? And in that you come up with beats for this repeating loop, and then you give those beats to storyboard artists who then sketch those out into something that will later turn into the animation. And so the revision process is visual in the sense that you look at the things that they've drawn and then you say, oh, don't do that or add that. And because it was Pendleton, we were everyone working with us, they were amazing. And so they just give you these gifts, man. They like interpret what you say. They give you like their idea of what it is, which is usually hilarious and funnier than anything you ever imagined. And then you tweak it and add stuff to it, or add, I mean, there is such a joy knowing you have a team of artists around you and you can literally ask them to draw anything and they will do that for you. They will draw anything in your head in their own style and then add to it their soul, their art. Oh God, it was the best, man. You would love it. Maybe that's your next step, yeah. Yachty. Animated shows.
I've been trying to, man. I'm working on it.
You're working on an animated. You have an idea for? We don't have to get into it.
Yeah, I do, and I'm trying to bring it to life. We're going to see. We're working on.
Oh my God! With your music. Yeah. Oh my God.
No, not music.
I'm saying no, you can add involved. Your music to it. Serious. I'm saying if you wanted to, you could like help make music for. Yeah. I don't mean.
Which is so crazy. Speaking of music, I love some of the music in Midnight Gospel. At the like when the credits would run. Did you make music?
Yes, I did. I can't believe you said
you
that.
You made some pretty trippy like songs that actually were really, really good. That would actually.
I can
like,
die now.
Really,
I'm done.
Good.
My incarnation
no, good
is
shit.
Complete. I'm out. I'm done. I'm finished with my life's work. Goodbye, everybody. Nice meeting you, Yachty. I'm going up to the mothership now. I'm going back to Alpha Centauri.
You have to tell me, what was that? Did you secretly want to make music? Was that just like a way for you to try it out, or how? What was that about?
I love making music, but I never had the confidence or sense of like, oh yeah, I'm going to make music. I'm going to be one of those people. So I, when I was in college, you know how you meet people in your life that just fucking derail you. Like you are going to go in one direction and then you meet somebody and that like in a good way derails you. So I met this musician, Emil Amos is his name. He's has a band called the Holy Sons, lots of bands. He's like the drummer for this band Ulm. You would like his music a lot. But this kid, when I was in college, he just had a four track, and you know, he would make the most beautiful music, like really beautiful, like good, incredible music. And we got to be friends because of Pink Floyd, because my dad used to run a shopping center, and one of the CD stores had closed down. And so he got all the CDs and my dad had just mailed me a bunch of Pink Floyd CDs. And I'm sitting in the cafeteria and Emil, like, who actually at the time I thought was an asshole. He would like, he was like, you know, I'm like, we're in college. You're fucking off. He would like, not, you know, you're not paying attention in class. I was such a nerd, but like, he came and sat down with me and was like, you like Pink Floyd? You like this? I'm like, yeah. He's like, you want to come listen? Let's go listen to some of this. So I went to his dorm room and that's when I saw it, the four track. That's when I saw the guitar. That's when I heard like, holy fuck, this, you can make music by yourself that sounds really good. And he introduced me to lo-fi, Daniel Johnston, Sebado, all the basement, beautiful basement indie shit that I'd never heard before. And anyway, so, you know, he showed me it's possible to do stuff, to make music with what you have. And ever since then, I've been drawn to like making music, but I never have. I do it as a kind of meditation, or like a, I do it for podcast intros. And in Pendleton, you know, it's one of the great gifts he gave me was he's like, why don't you make songs? You know, he encouraged me to make songs for the credits rolling.
Yeah.
And I never would have done it otherwise. I never would have like put my own music on my own show out of respect for people like you, for like musicians, you know what I mean? But he encouraged me to do it. So I did it. And then Joe Wong is the music producer. He would help like, you know, fix the tracks and stuff, because especially in those days, I had no idea what I was doing. I've gotten a little better since as far as like engineering.
Man, it sounds fucking great. It's fucking great. I'm telling you, I still don't understand. Well, I think I've sat many times and tried to realize why it doesn't have 3-4 seasons. And I think the only idea I can possibly come up with is just that a lot of people, as many people are tapped in, there's still a lot of people who don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, who don't understand. It's that show is such for like a certain type of person. Yeah. You know, like, it's not like, that's not the show, you know, like moms and fucking daughters and families
Laura's
are watching,
Lava.
You know,
It's not floor is lava. It's not excessive. You know, I have like very little bitterness towards Netflix. I mean, if you get canceled, there's no way you're not going to have a slight bit of bitterness. And if you don't admit that, no, you're not fooling anybody. It hurts, man. There is another season in my head of the show. But that was pretty much it. That's just like, there was supposed to be two seasons in my head, but you know why I got canceled, man? I got canceled because not enough people watched it, and Netflix is a business, mm-hmm. and it was expensive to make.
Right.
And they're just like, you know, like, yeah, we're like the executives we worked with were so fucking cool. And they're like, this is the beautiful thing. I can't believe we got to make this, you know, but it's Netflix. It's gotta, right. That algorithm tells them whether or not it's profitable based on subscribers. And if it's not, they cancel you. That's just, I can't get mad at them for that. They let me make something. I'm talking to you now because of it, you know, but it wasn't accessible enough. If we had tried to make it accessible enough, it wouldn't have been the show it was. So
exactly.
That's the problem.
That's well said. You know, if you were to try to appease the masses and make it something enjoyable for everyone to watch, it wouldn't have been what it is.
That's exactly right. And so you know, Pendleton, he'd already made Adventure Time. It's like, you know, his none of us were thinking as we were making it. Like, I honestly was like fully prepared for like absolute flop. Like, after we made it, I'm like, man, this shit's too weird for anybody. Like, no one, I don't know if people are going to respond to this at all. Like, what have we done? I was so thrilled that it was well received. I mean, that's enough for me. I mean, would I have liked it if it had been like The Walking Dead or something? Sure. Yachty, we built that world. Like, man, people don't understand how deep we went into the world of the Chromatic Ribbon. Like, nothing was anything you hear in that show, any weird sounding phrase, or everything was connected to a world that we built. I went as far as like, how do these simulators work? How long does it take them to like generate novelty artifacts for people to get? What happens if you run them too long? What, like, we went deep into it. And so I fell in love with that world and wanted to like do another season to sort of like show people more about what the Chromatic Ribbon was, who the progenitor was. But I'm so happy it exists at all, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that was a hell of an experience.
Man, I had just had my first kid, and I also was making my first TV show. So it was the most mind-blowing year of my life. Thank you, Lumi Labs, for supporting this episode of the DTFH. Lumi Labs has done it. They have created the perfect microdose of THC. If you're like me and you don't have time to walk that weird tightrope that you can find yourself on when you eat an edible, where at any moment you feel like you might go sliding off into a paranoid, crazy town, and you are gonna love Lumi Labs. I've tried other THC gummies and they're hit or miss, but Lumi Labs hits the bullseye every single time. I love these things. They just dial in that nice, warm, sweet, creative space that comes from the perfect dose of a gummy. Even better, they're available nationwide. That's right, you can fly with them. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com, use code Duncan to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Again, it's microdose.com, code Duncan to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. I swear by these things. They are amazing. You can find the links in the show description at duncantrussell.com. But again, that's microdose.com, code dunk it. I had just had my first kid, and I also was making my first TV show. So it was the most mind-blowing year of my life. It was just mind-blowing. I mean, you have recently had a kid, correct?
I have. I did. And it's funny. I had my kid the month I started making my album.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like almost similar to you. You know, like, you know, making your first show, I was making my first, you know, psychedelic album that meant the world to me. So it was definitely it was hand in hand experiences.
How did you work? Like, my experience with that is like, and I feel like you kind of like alluded to this earlier, but here you have this being that is the most beautiful creature you've ever seen in your life that you love more than anything. But then also here you have like, you know, your creative outflow into the universe and like the, you know, you want it, like, how do you balance it out? There's no way to balance it out. So it was a little bit of like a bittersweet experience in the sense of like, I was barely seeing the kid. I'm leaving early in the morning. I'm coming home late at night. I'm fucking tired. Yeah. You know, my wife is like, thank God she's like the way she is, but Jesus Christ, like she was might as well have been a single mom. You know, like I was, because you can't, what am I going to say? What am I going to tell Netflix? I had a baby.
100%. 100%.
Yeah,
I know exactly what you're saying and how you feel in that experience. 100%.
How are you dealing with it now? How are you working with it?
Trying.
Yeah.
You know, the attachment to her mother is so strong now.
How old is she?
She's one and two months. So her attachment to her mother is so strong right now. So I'm just trying to build the connection.
It'll come.
Yeah.
Is this your first?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 1 and 2 months. I mean, this is the thing, man. They're like, I'm sorry if this offends people, but they can't give a shit about you. Like, they love you. They know your daddy at this point, but like a little baby, I'm sorry, but like, good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck. Where are your breasts? You start lactating and you might have a friend.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, that's real. That's real. They love you. They want you. They want, I mean, I'm not saying that like the father in that situation is irrelevant, but I think the, you know, like your job is like very, they start like once they tune in to you. Oh my God. It's the most incredible thing. The first time my kid said dad, he literally leaned in and whispered it in my ear. I'll never forget it. He's like, "Daddy," and I was like, "Oh fuck!" That's the first of many nuclear love bombs he exploded in me.
Yeah, that's tight.
Yeah,
that's tight. Oh man, that's great. I got it, man. Let me ask you. I don't want to go too deep, but because I see where our time is, and I don't want to hold you, but
You're not holding me. You tell me what time you have. I could talk to you forever, man. Whatever you got, you let me know. What I'm sure you're busy as hell.
Sick. I am, but they could wait. So randomly, right? I started having this thought, and I asked Drake this question because he's one of my best friends, and he's such a smart guy. I want to go to it. I'm going to the question in my notes, and I just want to. I've been having this conversation with people. Basically, so there'd be a thing where I'd maybe be talking to someone, right? And they, no, oh, this is how it started. So I was in a studio with a couple homies in LA, and they were like, I don't know how we got to, but someone's like, man, how much did your child weigh when she came out? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right? And then they're like, you don't know how much your kid weighed when he came out. You don't. And I was like, no. And then I said, also, to tell you the truth, I don't know when my parents' birthday are. I know it's in January. I've never missed it. I've never missed my parents' birthday ever. They have everything they want. They always get whatever they want for a birthday. They get it. But personally, I know that it's in January, but I don't actually know the date, right? So then it caused this question in my head. The question is, why do people follow traits that come from years of brainwash and harmless manipulation, as far as like thinking that we have to know certain things that genuinely don't matter?
Yeah.
You know, like I obviously love my child to death more than anything in life, and me not knowing the weight that she was when she came out does not make me love her any less. No. It doesn't mean she's going to have a world any less more fortunate than I, much more fortunate than I had growing up, you know? All but right. Like, it's this thing in society that like people feel like certain things in life you have to know or you have to do. Like, you, how you don't know your parents' birthday or how, like, I don't know. Like, it's just, but it's just from years of brainwash of people thinking certain things you need to know.
Yeah.
You know, or you, but really don't fucking matter. You know, if you know them, that's great. But if you don't know them, it doesn't make you a shit person, you know?
Yeah, right.
Or it doesn't make you any less than, you know, it doesn't mean you love someone or care about someone any less. You get what I'm saying?
Dude, right now, I would bet $10,000 that somewhere, sadly, there is a kid in like a dog cage being fed bowls of shit, and their parent knows how much they weighed when they were born. You know what I mean? There's no connection to quantifying. We're talking about quantification of reality. It's like, yeah, I don't remember my parents' birthdays. And do I feel shame about that? Yes. Why do I feel shame about that? Exactly what you're talking about. At some point, somewhere along the way, I guess somebody got into people's heads and said, knowing numbers is more important than how you feel. Like, articulating numbers means more than the feeling you have for your parents or your kids or whatever. And maybe the reason is because how do you quantify that? Like, imagine if somebody was like, you know, can you come up with a number that represents how much you love your mom? Like, what number do you love your mom at? What, how much does your love weigh? What size is your love? It's unquantifiable. That's where all the entire material universe collapses in the face of love, right? It's like, there, you can't measure it, you can't weigh it, you can't bottle it. And it's very frustrating, I think, for materialists, for the material universe, because how the fuck can you sell something you can't quantify? How do you, it becomes useless in the face of capitalism. Maybe that's it. I don't know, but I never considered it brainwashing until you said that. But yeah, I think it is some kind of brainwashing.
I mean, along with like religion and anything else, no?
Well, it depends. I mean, it depends. We're talking about the, like, let's say Christian.
I mean, you can't come out of the womb a Christian, you know, like, or you can't come out of the womb an atheist, you know?
That would be amazing. That would be fucking amazing if somehow your baby came out and was like, Richard Dawkins said that death is the anesthesia that saves us from the pain of life. What did you make me for? This sucks. God, I'd love that baby atheist. The most annoying baby.
Oh, that's hilarious.
No, man, I don't think you can. I think that, like, yeah, I remember once I was meditating and I just realized how funny it was that I was thinking this was Buddhism. I'm like, you know, I'd given over the experience of meditation to Buddhism, which Buddhism doesn't ask you to do, but I had my own mind connected something that has existed much longer than any religion to a religion. And so I think where the brainwashing that you're talking about would happen is where someone who is considered a leader in any given religion claimed ownership over something that preceded the existence of that religion. That's where shit gets weird, right? Like, nobody can own, nobody owns anything, really, much less like no one can lay claim to this or that, you know, to the fundamental qualities of humanness. Though, you know, many people are pretty good at doing that and making people feel really guilty about it.
Yeah.
How could I be experiencing this if I'm not a Christian? How could I be feeling this if I'm not a Buddhist? I mean, I was watching your interviews, man. A lot of the things that you were saying, I'm like, oh, fuck. You must be Buddhist or something. You know, I did the thing to you just from hearing you talk about your own philosophy.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, you know what it is? I don't really like religion is interesting. It's an interesting conversation. You know, I don't really know where I get too religious. You know, I'm more spiritual.
Yeah.
And it's solely because I've just, the experiences I've had with crooked pastors, you know, and just crooked experiences where, like, you know, people just are hateful and judgmental towards someone as a person based on their career or how they look or the way they dress.
Yeah.
Or I've even seen it towards hatred towards people of their choice of sex.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who they love and who they want to be with. And I'm just, I in my heart, I can't see how that's right.
No.
In any religion. How is it right to shame someone because of who they genuinely love? You know, or because they have tattoos on their face or because their pants are sagging or whatever.
Yeah, man.
You know, like, I don't get it. You know, which pushed me away from the idea of committing completely to Christianity, you know?
Yeah.
It just started to make it sound fraudulent. You know?
Yes. I mean, this is one of the tragedies of, like, false teachers is that they like, you know, I have in my dark, very paranoid moments speculated, my God, like, it's almost like if there is a Satan, that being wouldn't be the thing that went around like burning Bibles or crucifixes or something, or like shitting on altars or whatever. That being would be the thing that infiltrated the whatever the particular religion was and posed as a representative of the religion while doing exactly to other people what apparently happened to you, diluting, showing hypocrisy, showing that it's, and then what ends up happening is instead of like going in on your own, minus the priest class, you just are like, fuck that. I don't want to be involved in that homophobic, fucking repressive, sex shaming bullshit. And then you abandon ship, which, why wouldn't you? I mean, Mark Twain has my favorite quote on religion. Religion is what happened when the first con man met the first fool. It's like, you know, it's like you're selling what? And you don't have to pay taxes. They don't have to pay taxes. So yeah, man, I think it's like, you know, one of my favorite, the first time I experienced Christ consciousness was when I was on LSD reading the book of John. Highly recommend Bible study while on acid.
Okay.
Yeah. Book of John on acid. It's like, holy shit, this is not what the pastor was telling me about. Like, whatever this is not the same. And I think that's what's beautiful about it. You know, it's like a secret. It's a secret for you. What am I doing? I'm fucking Buddhist. I'm going to convert you, Yanni. Just accept the Lord into your heart. No more profanities in those raps.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't know, man. I don't know. I respect everyone's identity, you know, and what you associate with. And I would never try to make anyone see something the way I see it. I am only one man.
Yes, that's it.
I don't work for a court system. I'm not a judge,
right?
You know, so I don't judge anyone. You know, I'm not here to tell anyone what's right and what's wrong. I just have my own thoughts of life, and that's that.
It's exhausting. Like, It's exhausting to judge. Judgment is so exhausting. Like, just retire from the profession of judgment. You'll have so much more energy. And it doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. That one of my teachers, Ram Dass, is one of his core tenets, even though you wouldn't call it a tenet, was we work on ourselves so we can help the people around us. That's it. Don't try to make somebody mm-hmm. else your home renovation project. You know, don't mm-hmm. get into that. It doesn't work. It doesn't work.
I think sometimes people do it, or even like bring people down to try and pull themselves up.
Oh, the drowning method, like the classic drowning mm-hmm. method. You're drowning and then you get around somebody and fucking like use them as some kind of horrible gasping ladder.
Flotation device.
Yeah, man. That's it. People use other people as, people use other people as flotation devices. They do. Mm-hmm. They just float around the ocean of life on other people, ignoring that the other people are clearly drowning. Not even considering, you know, if your flotation device goes down, you're going down too.
Absolutely. Well, that's the self-centeredness of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah, it is unfortunate because they think they're drowning. It's like, you know, number one, you're not drowning. You just think you are. I think you can see him back there. The dude smoking a cigarette. That's Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who is another Buddhist teacher that I love. And he said, the bad news is you're falling. The good news is there's no ground. So a lot of people, they think they're drowning because they don't understand that they could breathe underwater. You know, they don't realize like you're just panicking. Underneath the panic, everything's fine. You're fine. Man, I'm
right.
Yachty, I don't want to hold you up, man. I don't know what your time schedule is. So, I have as long as you've got, man. You got people waiting on you. I don't want
to. Yeah, I do. I need to be somewhere, but this was so fun, man. I hope we can we do another one sometime?
Anytime. I will just to like continue chatting with you, man. We could just, I'll turn the podcast. It's just conversations with us.
Yeah, man. We have to keep in communication and conversation.
For sure, man. I'm assuming the number I have for you still works. I don't know, but.
No, I changed my numbers, but I have your number and I'm definitely going to text you.
Text me an offline if you like. Not that I have like a lot to offer in that regard, but if you have any animation questions or if you, I would love to hear your idea, what you're cooking up over there. I'd love to hear it, man.
I will. And I'm going to tell you, I just texted you. So
okay, great.
We'll be in contact, man. This was amazing, bro.
Likewise. And
I thank you so much for having
you
me.
You made my year. Lil Yachty, God bless you. Thank you so much for being on the show. Much love to your family. And we'll be talking soon.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
And you, brother.
Have a good day.
Peace.
That was Lil Yachty, everybody. You can find his new album, Let's Start Here, everywhere on all the streaming services. Make sure you listen to it. Subscribe to the Patreon. It's patreon.com/DTFH. Much thanks to our sponsors. And come see me and William Montgomery in Nashville this week. I'll see you soon. Until then, Hare Krishna.